History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories right there around you that really ought to be heard. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we listen to those memories, we're not only educated, we're not only entertained, so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. As the world counts down to the 75th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy, we're focusing each episode leading up to June 6th on different elements of D-Day and listening to the memories of people who were involved. This time, we're going to focus on those who cared for the casualties, both those wounded in action and those killed in action. And since it's Mother's Day weekend and National Nurses Week, who better to start with than a mother of two who would never have become a mother if she didn't survive the war in Europe as a nurse treating the wounded at Normandy and beyond. Phyllida Brodalski passed away 3 years ago at the age of 96, but the Massachusetts native was just 21 when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. She waited on pins and needles, hoping to hear from her older sister, a nurse who had been working there on Oahu. Once she finally heard from her, Phyllida was determined to follow in her sister's footsteps and join the war effort. But that would require a little creativity because of the heart condition she'd been born with.
I was doing private duty nursing, waiting to go in the service to take my exam, my health exam. And I happened to know this doctor on a maternity ward who was at Westover Field. He was a captain. And he did my physical and told him that it was a murmur that was generic. It wasn't anything else.
So you knew you had a heart condition that would disqualify you?
Yeah, Dr. Henderson had told me when I was in training, but I didn't tell them. I just know that I was going to go in. I was determined I was going to go in.
She went in, all right, and in June of 1944, she arrived at Normandy's Utah Beach 10 days after the initial landings.
There were only five hospitals on the beach at that time, and we only had a five-mile region they had captured, and one was going towards France, the other was going up the peninsula to Cherbourg. And we set up our hospital in a field, and 3 hours after we opened up, we had to shut down because we had 300 patients. I had them, I was pre-op nurse, I had them all over the field. I had them in three hospital tents. We were just overloaded.
Now, I'm sure when you went over on the ship, you had an idea of what it was going to be like, and you probably felt like you were somewhat prepared for this, right?
Well, not really. You think you are, but boy, it's a lot different from what you think.
What was the hardest thing, the thing that really struck you the most and maybe overwhelmed you the most? Was it just the sheer numbers of casualties? Was it what they looked like? Can you give us a sense of what that was experience was like emotionally for you?
It was hard. In pre-op, we had mostly the patients with the broken legs and the, you know, the minor surgery. Major Emery had the shock tent, which is the beginning of the special unit that you have today. We had a few of his patients that we kept if we had time, but mostly it was the minor surgery, if you can call it minor, and we used to prepare them for the surgery and get them through as fast as we could.
You talked about thinking that you were prepared, but quickly realizing that you couldn't possibly be prepared for this.
In our day, nurses didn't give intravenous. They didn't do a lot of the things that nurses do today, but I learned very quickly how to do it on the beach.
I'm sure you also learned very quickly that there were some soldiers that you just couldn't do much for. How hard was that for you to come to grips with that fact?
It was rough. I can remember in Aachen, Germany, where we were stationed in a barracks and had made a hospital out of it, and it was Christmas time when the Hertzkin Forest began to bulge. And I came on duty that night, and the fellas, the Red Cross people had decorated all the rooms. The fellas were singing and feeling pretty good because it was Christmas. And right smack in the middle of the ward was this poor 18-year-old dead. No one around him realized it. So I got him out, had my corpsman take him out right away. But it just hit at Christmas time. That was pretty bad.
I can tell it still bothers you today, and I think everyone understands why. I've got to ask you, at this time, and women were a huge part of the American effort in World War II, not just in the service, but back at home as well. But when you are out there, vastly outnumbered by all these men, what was that like? Was it hard to be a woman around all these guys?
Not really. You were just what you were. You know, you were a nurse or you were a corpsman and stuff. And I had two wonderful corpsmen. One was a corporal, the other was a sergeant. And they looked out for me. They took care that I didn't get into trouble, you know. And no, we all just like family, really. That's what it was like.
Did you go into it thinking this was a dangerous job, or were you fooled into thinking that since you were wearing a Red Cross?
I just knew how I was going to go in. If Lena could do it, then I could do it.
When did you realize that it didn't matter if you had a Red Cross on, or you were wearing a nurse's uniform, or you were officially a non-combatant, that you could be in danger yourself?
Oh, yes. We were in a rest period in France in between changes. And one morning about 6 o'clock, this airplane comes over and drops a bomb just over the hedgerow from where the nurses were. So we could have died if it hadn't been a dud. And then another time was when they were strafing the road, and they would come right up to the area where we had our Red Cross, and then they would stop on the other side. Fortunately, they did that. They lived by the Red Cross rules. But if they hadn't, you could have said goodbye.
We wouldn't be having this conversation right now, that's for sure. What would you say was the hardest thing for you to overcome in your whole experience as a nurse in World War II? The biggest challenge, or I'm sure you had some days where you thought, you know what, this is hard. I don't know if I want to wake up and do this tomorrow.
You got very tired. We didn't have days off. You worked 12 hours to 18 hours a day. And some days it was just packed with ambulances bringing in the wounded, that you wondered what in the world you were ever going to do, because you thought you'd never get through handling the injured. You just enjoyed doing your work, feeling that you were doing some good, that you were doing a place in the service that no one else could do. And that's what made you feel pretty good. And there were times when you were pleased because you could really help a person. I got a patient in there who was bleeding from a wound in his arm. And I knew he was dying because the blood was just pouring out. And so I gave him plasma and blood and shipped him into the operating room as soon as I could so that they could tie it off and, you know, do something.
And those are, I mean, truly life or death situations. If you make the wrong decision, it could cost someone his life.
That's right. And, you know, you had a doctor in charge of the war, but he was so busy that you had to do a lot of the things that he did, and you did them. We found out when I was in France about the Rh factor. And here we were giving blood, you know, just to anybody without involving whether it was the Rh factor or not. So that was a big change when they started testing for that. So then you felt better because when you were given the blood, you know it was the right one and you were helping.
That's hard for us to fathom today, isn't it? No doubt the families of the wounded who survived are eternally grateful to Normandy nurses like the late Phylda Brodalski. But what about the families of the fallen? I'm guessing that even if we added up everybody listening right now on all of our affiliate radio stations and all those streaming the podcast online, my guess is less than 1% of you have heard of the Mother of Normandy. Madame Simone Renault was the wife of the mayor of St. Maraglisse, the first French town liberated by Allied forces in Normandy. She is the subject of an outstanding documentary by filmmaker Doug Stebbleton. That film will actually be screened for American servicemen in France on the eve of D-Day's 75th anniversary next month. You can order the film and the accompanying book at motherofnormandy.com, and I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Right now, I want to give you a chance to listen to the film's trailer, and I think you'll get the idea.
World War II. In the early morning hours of the Allied D-Day invasion, thousands of paratroopers from the 82nd and 101st U.S. Airborne Divisions landed in the Normandy countryside and liberated the small town of Sainte-Maraglisse.
The night of June the 5th, June 6, 1944, is probably one of the most indelible moments in American military history.
Madame Simone Renault, her husband Alexander, the mayor of Sainte-Maraglisse, and their three young sons witnessed the triumph and tragedy of D-Day firsthand.
We had front row seats on what happened there because we were living on the square. The Germans shot all the paratroopers who landed in the trees. They did not take any prisoner.
Sainte-Maraglisse became the final resting place for thousands of soldiers killed in the battle. But they would not be forgotten. Madame Renault took it upon herself to care for the graves of the boys who gave their lives so that her sons could grow up in peace.
All her life changed entirely after the invasion.
And then, letters from American families began to arrive.
Within a couple of months after my father's death, my grandmother contacted Mayor Renault and asked him,
"Is there anyone in your community that could possibly put some flowers on my son's grave?"
The mayor gave the letters to his wife. Madame Renault, who spoke fluent English, reached out across the ocean to strangers in need.
Dozens and dozens of people wrote to her.
They responded immediately and sent her a picture of my father's grave with the flowers and with them there and with their son there. And that was a tremendous boost to my grandmother.
When Life magazine published a photo of Madame Renault tending to Theodore Roosevelt Jr.'s grave, even more letters began to pour into the town. Madame Renault answered every single one of them.
She saw the boys laying outside on the church ground. In her heart, she knew what a mother was feeling when she got that telegram. It helped a great deal knowing that there's somebody there taking care of their son's grave.
It's part of our heritage that we express our gratitude to the American people.
Join us for a journey into the life of a woman whose heart knew no bounds, Madame Simone Renault, the Mother of Normandy.
Again, link to that documentary film and the book by the same title at motherofnormandy.com or at hometownheroesradio.com. And maybe that can be a conversation starter for you this Mother's Day. When we come back, from someone who tended to those graves of the fallen to a young man who had to bury them, Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.